Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, it's our first show. You and I have known each other for a long time, since the early 80s. But we were each involved in healthcare a long time before that.
Right. We started in the cradle. Mark was 19 when he started the Community Health Center with a group of his friends.
And Margaret became a nurse right out of college. Over the years, we've had lots of conversations about the cool things that people are doing to reinvent the healthcare system, some from all over the world.
Yes, and we've seen a lot of eyes glaze over at parties as we went on and on about things like how to vaccinate 100 people in an hour.
That was the first swine flu scare.
Or the data on flossing.
But in the past few months, we've noticed the kinds of things that interest healthcare geeks are suddenly okay to talk about in public. Suddenly, it's cool to be into healthcare.
So we thought, what if we just take the kinds of things we talk about among ourselves and put it on the air?
That's what this show's about. Conversations on healthcare. How to change it. Who's doing it right. How we're going to get there.
We'll invite people to come and talk with us.
Pick their brains.
This is our first show. We have an amazing lineup of people to talk to.
First, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House of Representatives, at ground zero in the debate on reform. She'll give us her take on where things stand.
Next, we'll talk about how San Francisco has achieved what most cities can still only dream of, universal access to health care and universal coverage, like insurance, but not. It's a program called Healthy San Francisco.
And we'll also have the health care news headlines from around the world, brought to you every week by our own Lucy Nalpathanchel, who's had a long career in public radio, and we're glad to have her as our producer. We'll start with a look at recent health care news.
I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel for this week's headline news. 9 months after President Obama came into office with the promise to reform health care, Finance Committee Chair U.S. Senator Max Baucus has released his long-awaited health care plan. Now the real work begins. The president wants a bill on his desk that includes a public option. Senator Baucus's plan does not include a public option. Here are the next steps. There are two competing Senate bills. After the Senate agrees on a final health care reform bill, both chambers will go into conference and hammer out a final plan. We'll continue to follow what develops. As part of our health care headlines, we'll bring you newsmaker conversations. One of the key figures in health care reform has been Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, who's a leading proponent of the public option. Mark and Margaret spoke with Speaker Pelosi.
Joining us by phone now is House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. Thank you for talking with us this afternoon.
I welcome that opportunity. Thank you.
Now, the House seems ready to pass a health care bill, but the Senate seems to be divided. Senator Baucus has just introduced his plan before the Finance Committee, and that plan doesn't include a public option. What do you think can be done to close the divide on this issue?
Well, the other bill in the Senate, the HELP bill, has a public option in it. So it remains to be seen what bill Senator Reid will take to the floor of the Senate. There is very strong support among the House, the Senate Democrats for a public option. So we would hope that one would either be in the Senate bill or they'd be receptive to agreeing to one in the House bill. Now that the Senate has put out a mark and will take amendments this week out of the Finance Committee, we're on our way to having a bill that we can send to the president's desk this year.
Speaker, we know you've been busy in Washington on bringing about meaningful health reform, but the debate now seems to be focused in on the public option.
The public option makes guarantees that you will have health care for the targeted population that you're trying to reach. On a national level, the public option could possibly save over $100 billion. We're waiting for the final number from the Congressional Budget Office, but it's well over $85 billion that it saves. So what we're trying to do with public option is to keep the health insurance companies competitive and honest, and to also to have that competition lower cost as it improves quality, expands coverage, and enables people to maintain what they have if they like it. At a cost they can afford by having this competition.
You know, Speaker, you've been out all over the country talking to people, listening to people. What's your suggestion for the average citizen who's concerned and anxious about reform at this point as it's coming to the end? How can they participate in the process over the last remaining months and weeks?
It's really important for everyday people to understand what's in this bill for them. It says that there will be important insurance reforms, that no longer can you be discriminated against by an insurance company because you have a pre-existing medical condition. If you lose your job, you do not lose your health insurance. Insurance companies will no longer be able to rescind your policy because you get sick. And the list goes on. There is a cap as to what you can pay in premiums. There is no cap in what you receive in benefits. This is especially important to the disabilities community or people with chronic disease.
Speaker, what about the cost?
In terms of the cost, it's important for them to know that unless we take action, we're never going to be able to afford even what we have now, because the escalation in health care costs, premiums, pharmaceuticals, you name it. So, to maintain, as the president says, if you like what you have, you can keep it. Well, that can only happen if we pass this bill. The status quo would price that same option, that same choice out of the means of many, many Americans. So to people who are listening and have concerns about what change may mean to them, they have to know that we must have the change even to for them to have the choice to keep what they have. They also should know that this is it's important to individuals, it's important to families, it's important to businesses, can't be competitive with the escalating cost of health insurance, and it's important to our economy and to our budget. We can no longer sustain the rising cost of Medicare and Medicaid, and that's why we must have reform as well.
Speaker, you've talked a lot about the need for innovation in health care. How's that reflected in the bill?
We try to improve quality and save money by having innovation play an important part, that we will have quality, not quantity of procedures, that we'll have value, not volume, that we'll have health and information technology that will enable us to do things in a much better way. So it's important for them to know that we need to take this step in terms of innovation.
You've been a great champion for the electronic health record. Do you see that as one of the more important innovations that you've been thinking about and seeing around the country as you've traveled around and talked with people in the healthcare field?
It really is. We in anticipation of passing a health reform insurance reform bill, now earlier in the year when we did the recovery package, we put billions of dollars in for health information technology. And we did so because this is central to, again, reducing costs to improve quality. First of all, it takes your records to wherever you are. So in our interest of making health care available closer to home or closer to the workplace and the rest, the health records will follow the person. Therefore, whoever treats the individual will know what medicines they have taken, what they're allergic to, what their history is. And this is about time, and time is very important in terms of treatment and success. Also that physicians and healthcare providers are not spending their time and resources on paperwork and red tape.
Speaker, can you tell us how health reform will control costs and address the issue of Medicare?
What we're doing will all be paid for, A, B, will lower cost over time and prevent, more important than that, will prevent the escalation of cost. In order to keep Medicare, for example, solvent and viable, it's important for us to take the waste, fraud, and abuse out of Medicare, and we can do that. In fact, it's essential that we do that in order for our seniors and those who depend on Medicare and Medicaid, I might add, to know that it is there for them. Since I mentioned seniors, I'll say that in the bill we will also have, we will close the donut hole in the House bill. That's a difference between the House, one of the differences between the House and the Senate. So this is about affordability for the middle class. It's about security for our seniors. It's about accountability for our insurance companies. And it's about our responsibility to the future.
Margaret, that was great. The speaker came on our inaugural radio show. She's quite passionate about the public option. It will be interesting to see how all of this plays out.
It certainly will. And while the speaker works to bring about national health reform, including a public option, in her home district in San Francisco, there's a great example of what could be called a local option to cover the uninsured and create universal access. It's called Healthy San Francisco. Here's Lucy Nalpathanchil with the details.
Healthy San Francisco was launched in 2007 after a large provider network was created made up of community health centers, public clinics, and nonprofit hospitals. It's not health insurance. Rather, it's a program that targets 73,000 uninsured adult residents by giving them access to quality health care within the borders of the city and county of San Francisco. Enrollees are assigned to a medical home or healthcare facility that's close to where they live, so it's easier to access primary care and other services. 2 years later, 75% of the uninsured have enrolled in Healthy San Francisco. Mayor Gavin Newsom says the program, an example of a public option, has been a success.
And I underscore this frame, this public option, where the sky has not fallen in, the world as we know it did not come to an end, businesses did not rush up and out of this city, and we've been able to do it without increasing taxes and without creating a new bureaucracy, all those fears that some had fretted about when we initiated this program.
There have been several reports that outline Healthy San Francisco's progress. Recently, Kaiser Family Foundation released a survey of enrollees. Molly Ann Brody, Kaiser's Vice President of Public Opinion and Survey Research, says Healthy San Francisco is an example for other municipalities who are trying to increase access to health care in their communities, although she says San Francisco has an advantage.
I think this is showing that these kinds of geographically specific programs are possible and that they can and, you know, our survey shows provide access and help to uninsured residents. It's also important to remember that there was an extensive infrastructure in place for the program to build upon, and so therefore it might not be the model for all other communities.
Back in San Francisco, healthcare providers like Christina Ng say the program has changed the lifestyles of many enrollees.
They really want to come in and get them, you know, give themselves a checkup, make sure everything's okay, you know, stay healthy. So we do see a change in how patient, you know, access and health care now.
Ng works at Northeast Medical Services, a community health center that's based in San Francisco's Chinatown. She says Healthy San Francisco helps bridge the gap for most of their patients who live at or below the 500% federal poverty level and who don't have access to any other state or federal health care program. How is it paid for? The cost is taken care of by city and state dollars and by San Francisco employers who are mandated to pay a small fee per hour for their employees. The cost for Healthy San Francisco participants is dependent on a sliding scale based upon their income. For Conversations on Healthcare, I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil.
Lucy, thanks for your report. And joining us now by phone is Public Health Director for the City and County of San Francisco, Dr. Mitch Katz. Thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you for the invitation to join you.
Well, welcome, Dr. Katz. And you know the whole country is thinking about healthcare access for the uninsured. Your Healthy San Francisco program is a great model to learn from. Was there as much of a struggle to get healthcare reform in your city as we're now seeing nationally?
In San Francisco, we in many ways focused on a simpler question than the federal government is looking at right now. We focused on the moral imperative to cover the uninsured. I think one of the challenges that the federal government has is they're looking at how do we cover the uninsured, how do we bend the curve, how do we fix the hole in Medicare drug coverage, while we really attacked a narrower, but I would argue very important question.
Dr. Katz, I know that San Francisco has put together a large provider base made up of community health centers, public health clinics, safety net hospitals, but most physicians belong to small private practices. Have you been able to engage those providers in your initiative?
We have now. Your description is correct. In the beginning, our network was the public provider, and our terrific federally qualified health centers. But now we've been able to expand to all of the nonprofit hospitals, Kaiser, and even a physician association. So we now have the Chinese Community Health Association, which has individual doctors, and those doctors are able to see our patients. The one thing we'll never be able to do in our model is contract with individual doctors, because we don't pay claims. We pay an amount of money per person cared for per month. So the model would be generalizable to any place where doctors are associated within a private provider organization or some glue that holds them together.
So you have a lot of innovation in Healthy San Francisco, and one of the areas that we've been so impressed with is the technology and the way you've used technology to leverage access to care and to eliminate the delays and the waste that we sometimes see in the healthcare system. Tell us about that.
We've found technology has been the answer to a lot of problems our system suffered from before. So even without all of the coverage part of Healthy San Francisco, when we went to our new model, we had one internet system that all of our providers could use to enroll our patients. And this accomplished two goals. One was that we were now able to get our patients benefits that they were entitled to that they didn't even know they were entitled to. So in enrolling our 46,000 members, it turns out that almost 5,000 of them were entitled to Medicaid and didn't know it. And that turns out to be good for them, and it turns out to be good for our providers because they now get a higher level of reimbursement. By having this common system, also, now we know where everybody is getting care. We know how many people are not getting care at all, and we've eliminated the duplication that comes from someone going to one clinic on Monday and going to a different clinic on Wednesday. The person who sees them on Wednesday doesn't even know that they were seen on Monday. So we're big advocates for trying to come up with a common internet system so that anyone can use it. Internet systems are used by our storefront clinic that's in the poorest section of the city because it doesn't require that people have sophisticated computer equipment.
We're talking with Dr. Mitch Katz, San Francisco's health director, about innovative health access program for the uninsured in the city. Dr. Katz, one of the hallmarks of this initiative is your commitment to establishing medical homes for everyone enrolled. Can you explain this idea for us?
Under our old system, people went wherever they went that day, and they got whatever care they got. No one person was responsible. I learned this when I went to my computer staff and said, well, I want to know what percentage of women over the age of 50 in my system got mammograms. And I was very disappointed at the low number, but when I went and talked to my providers, they started looking at the lists, and they said, well, she goes over here, and she goes over there, and she just came once. And I suddenly realized that without a unifying system, there is no accountability. So under our new system, each person has to choose a primary care home. And that's the only place where the care is provided under Healthy San Francisco. And then from the provider point of view, now each provider has a certain number of people for whom they are responsible. If that person doesn't get a mammogram, then I go to that person and I say, why are your mammogram levels only 40% of eligible women, while the doctor in the room next door to you, she's able to get 90% of her women mammograms?
Well, maybe that explains why when the Kaiser Foundation surveyed your participants in Healthy San Francisco, they found 9 out of 10 people say they're satisfied with coverage, and even the local Chamber of Commerce supports it. But there have been some concerns about the burden on small businesses who may have trouble with these costs. How are you addressing their concerns?
Well, certainly this has been a difficult issue. The employer spending requirement that we have in San Francisco has been a challenge for those businesses that have traditionally not provided health benefits. And that's heavily the restaurant industry. The rest of San Francisco businesses, when we first started the program, we found out that about 80% of businesses were providing insurance or some other health benefit. And so for that 80%, it wasn't a problem at all. And some of those people even said, well, gee, it's unfair that I'm paying for health benefits and my competitor across the street is not, and so I'm at a disadvantage. Let's level the playing field. But in the restaurant industry, that's just not true, and it has been difficult. It's a very cutthroat industry where profit margins are very small.
Moving a little away from San Francisco, cost, quality, access, choice, these are all the big drivers in health reform debate. What's your advice to President Obama and Speaker Pelosi?
They have a very tough job. At many times, I've wondered if it really can all be done in one bill. I admire our speaker's work on behalf of a public option. I believe that a public option is necessary in order to guarantee that our especially for-profit insurance companies offer meaningful benefits to people. But it is a very tough road when you're trying to do so many different things. And my hope is that if we can't pass an overall bill, then that at least let's do what we can do to make lives better for the uninsured.
Now, Dr. Katz, it's only been a few years, but of course we want to focus some attention on outcomes. We know the data on outcomes when people don't have insurance or access to care. Do you have any outcomes yet that you can point to and say, here's the benefit of having made this investment?
From the Kaiser study, we know not only that people are satisfied, but 40% of people say that they have fewer unmet needs for health care than they had prior to the program. So I would consider that an outcome, although it's subjective. It's somebody reporting. It isn't on the basis of data on utilization rates. In the next phase of the evaluation, what we're going to be looking at is emergency room use that's inappropriate and hospital admissions that are inappropriate, meaning that the avoidable, I should say, emergency department visits that are avoidable, hospital visits that are avoidable, and try to see whether we can show decreased rates. We do know that since starting Healthy San Francisco, our emergency department use has been less than a comparable population seen by Medicaid.
You know, Dr. Katz, we just have a short time left. Can you tell us what's next in San Francisco in terms of innovation in healthcare access, and what excites you?
So we're up to 46,000 of the 60,000 uninsured, and I want to get to 50,000. And then I want to focus some more effort on what I would call population prevention. So, for example, I want to be able to contact every smoker and be able to offer them a nicotine patch with the hopes that they will stop smoking even before they've ever gone to see their doctor. I want to approach them about increasing their exercise and improving their diets without necessarily ever seeing the doctor, because I think we can make a lot of inroads in making people healthier.
Dr. Mitch Katz, Public Health Director for the City and County of San Francisco, thank you for joining us today.
If there's one thing that everyone in the healthcare debate can agree on, it's that access to medical care is just one part of the puzzle. We also need to create healthy lifestyles. Each week, Conversations will be pointing out a bright idea about how to fit wellness and healthy choices into the daily life of your community.
This week, we heard from a group of parents who found a healthy solution to a modern problem. Most parents have fond memories of walking to school as a child, but years of media attention on the possible danger of strangers has made the sight of a child walking to school an endangered species. The unintended consequence? A life that's more sedentary and less independent than children in previous decades. One school in Kansas has their kids hopping on a new kind of school bus this fall, the walking school bus. Parents in each neighborhood take turns supervising groups of walking kids. The kids learn the joys of independence and they get some exercise, but with fewer risks. North Lawrence Elementary School in Lawrence, Kansas has had great success with the program since school started.
For some families, it's important that their kids are learning to save the environment and fight obesity at the same time. And it doesn't hurt that it's kind of fun, too. If you'd like more information on how to set up a walking school bus in your town, go to www.walkingschoolbus.org. Now that's a bright idea.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Until next time, peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.